Last week we began our Christmas series by looking at two men who were grieving the loss of a good friend. Unbeknownst to them, the one they were grieving over appeared and began walking with them and talking with them. And that first observation is probably the most important one to make, is that Jesus walks with people who are downcast and brokenhearted. Jesus walks with those who are broken and downcast. That's worth repeating for this reason. We have a tendency to think that we need to get our act together in order to not disappoint him, that we need to do right things in order to have him come alongside and really be our friend and love us and walk with us. But the truth is, Jesus comes alongside the downcast. He comes alongside the grieving, the weary, the broken, and he walks with them. Calls to mind the passage out of the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5. Blessed are the poor in spirit. The poor in spirit. Not the spiritually elite, but the poor in spirit are the ones who are blessed. Would you open your Bibles this morning to the same passage, Luke the 24th chapter. And if you're using one of the blue Bibles that's in the pew rack right there in front of you, which, by the way, if you don't have a Bible, you need to take that one home with you. That's our gift to you. Great time of year for us to give you a gift. So if you use that today, just take it home. We've got plenty. We'll replace it. But please feel free to use that for your own benefit. And if you're using one of those, page 859 is where you want to be today. Page 859. And that'll take you to the 24th chapter of the Gospel of Luke. And our text today, it begins in verse 22. Luke 24, beginning in verse 22. The men are talking with Jesus, and they are telling him about the events that have just taken place. They're telling Jesus about Jesus. We kind of laughed about that last week. And they say, he was a prophet. He was powerful in word and deed. The chief priests and rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death and crucified him. And this conversation is happening just 3 days after that, when they went to the tomb and discovered that Jesus wasn't there. So verse 22, in addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus. Donna Hsu sent me an article from a magazine this week that underscored what we had talked about last week, and I thought it would save a lot of time instead of reviewing everything we did last week to simply quote a few passages from this article from Stat Magazine. The overdose epidemic that so many Americans are talking about isn't really a single epidemic. It's actually several of them, something we began exploring when we graphed the yearly counts of overdose deaths for the last 40 years. It turns out that when totaled, these sub-epidemics trace a nearly perfect exponential growth curve. For four decades, overdose deaths have been growing, doubling every 8 years. We think, now this is this magazine's conclusion, this is not a preacher concluding, this is a magazine concluding. We think that deep forces are holding the multiple sub-epidemics together in a smooth exponential trajectory. And then it goes on to say, policies aimed mainly at opioid control and treatment may not be enough to permanently bend the overdose death curve downward in the future. And last paragraph of the article, without also focusing on social determinants of economic disparity, reinstating a sense of purpose and rebuilding communities, history indicates that the growth curve for overdose deaths will look increasingly dim. Did you hear that? If we treat the opioid crisis as just a medical issue, We don't believe that the numbers are going to change. We believe there are other factors, including one they say that is binding all the factors together, but they specifically list the absence of purpose as contributing to the cheap value placed on life. What's all that got to do with what we're talking about today? Simply this. There's a reason why we should have purpose. There's a reason why we should have hope. There's a reason why we should look in the mirror and see ourselves as people who have value. And it's not because of the chemical elements that make up the human body. They are worth, what, $30? We're valuable because we were made by God. And that God has a plan, and we fit into the plan. And whether I perceive it or not, whether I understand it or not, it really comes down to one thing. Do I trust the plan of the Creator? So look with me, if you would please, at this passage in Luke 24. Because it's one thing when we look at this story and we put it in the context of Easter, and that's usually when this gets dealt with. Where else are you going to go to church in December and get a sermon about Easter? Luke 24 talks about these two men who are walking. It's Easter Sunday. It's a little bit later in the day, and they are disappointed. Now, it's one thing to be disappointed by someone that you anticipate is going to disappoint you. It's another thing to be disappointed by someone who you had a lot of confidence in. When you're left disappointed by someone that you really expected to keep their promise, it's painful. Some of you have been in a situation where you have been disappointed by someone and you knew it was coming, you anticipated it, it really wasn't a surprise. But there's a whole other level of disappointment when you've been disappointed by someone and you really thought that the promise they made to you they were going to keep. It's downright painful to experience that. That's where these two men are this morning. As they're walking and talking with Jesus, they had high hopes. They believed that he was the Messiah, the promised one of God. They expected him to change their lives. They expected him to change the whole world. They had seen and heard of his power, power even over death. They had heard that he had raised Lazarus from the dead. They knew all about that, and they were dreaming of a world where the Romans would finally get theirs. But when the bad guys won and Jesus was in the grave, they were left scratching their heads. None of it had turned out the way that they had expected. Life had not gone the way they thought it was going to go. Their hopes had not just been dashed, their hopes had been crushed, and they are downcast and they are despondent, and they're walking along talking about this, and Jesus pulls up alongside of them. And in verses 22 and 23, we see that they report to Jesus. In addition, some of our women amazed us because they went to the tomb this morning and they didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus. Now, the women had seen Jesus. It was the companions, the disciples, who got to the tomb second, and they didn't see Jesus. The body of Jesus is missing. That's the bottom line. We know the other side of the story. We've been to enough sunrise services to know the rest of the story. They didn't know. There wasn't a rest of the story then. Jesus is gone. Their world's been turned upside down. The report's hard to believe. Wouldn't you have a hard time believing if you went to a funeral this week and next week you bumped into the person that you had buried? That would be hard to believe. On top of everything else, this is the first century, and the testimony of women was inadmissible in any court. So the women, I mean, if you were going to set up a lie to try to deceive the masses, you never would have had women being the first witnesses to the resurrection. It's what makes me, one of the things that makes me believe in the resurrection is that God specifically went out of his way to have a group of women be the first ones to discover Jesus, because there's no way that that would have been a logical way to pull off a big hoax. That's the way God did it. Now, the interesting thing here is these two men that are walking with Jesus, they're treating this like a mystery. We just can't figure out what happened. It just is all so strange. Some of our companions, verse 24, Peter and John went to the tomb. Isn't it interesting that the last thing that we tend to believe is that Jesus did exactly what he said he was going to do? You see, he had told them that this was going to happen. There's no way that this should have been a mystery. But you know what they're doing? They are doubting in the dark what God had revealed to them in the light. They're going through a season. They're going through a tunnel right now, and they're going, what happened to the sun? The sun is missing. Where is the sun? It's like, hey, you're just going through a tunnel. You just can't see it right now, but it doesn't mean that anything has changed. Just wait. It's all going to make sense. It's going to be there again when you come out on the other side of the tunnel. But we panic. He had told the disciples that he was going to be resurrected from the grave. He had told them multiple times that it's what was going to happen. And yet when their minds first heard of it, they went a dozen different places other than the place that they should have gone before they finally concluded, well, no, wait a minute. They never did finally conclude. Jesus had to appear to them to get them to believe in the upper room. One scholar wrote regarding this passage, there was a violent struggle going on between hope and fear. A violent struggle between hope and fear. Can I ask you a question? Is there anybody in this room that's there this morning? A violent struggle between hope and fear. Part of you is hopeful, but there's part of you, you're fearful. How's this going to end? What's this going to look like? I don't know. This isn't going the way I thought it was going to go. This is spinning out of control. You know, we get on people who only come to church for Christmas and Easter. We call them CE Christians. They show up at Christmas time. They show up at Easter. One of my favorite cartoons that someone cut out and gave to me was a guy greeting the pastor at the door, shaking his hand, and he said, Pastor, I got to tell you, I only come to church once a year, but you only preach on the resurrection. I think maybe there's a little bit of an advantage to the CE Christian. Perhaps there's an advantage in that they are constantly being reminded of two important pieces of information. Jesus came into the world at Christmas, and he died for the world at Easter. Came into the world at Christmas, died for the world at Easter. Because those two ideas often get disconnected. We get so preoccupied with focusing on one that we separate it from the other. And at Easter, it's all about the resurrection, but we don't seem to recall the birth. And sometimes at Christmas time, we get so involved with the baby in the manger that we forget the cross and the empty tomb that go along with it. Two concepts that we tend to keep separated are actually tied together in a profound way. The men on the road to Emmaus were aware that the Messiah had been born. They obviously knew that. They had interacted with him. No doubt they had known his mother, who was still living. Yet at this key moment in the story of Jesus, they're not struggling with his arrival in Bethlehem. They are struggling with his death in Jerusalem. Jesus was born to die. He came into the world for that purpose, to pay the penalty for the sin of the entire world, and not just the world as it existed then. He paid the penalty for those who had lived before him, and for people like you and me who would live after him. That one moment in time on the cross took care of all the sin of the whole world. His ultimate purpose for the time that he spent on earth was to lay down his life in payment to satisfy the justice of God. That's why Matthew 1:21 in the Christmas narrative that we often read says, they will call his name Jesus because he will save his people from their sin. John MacArthur writes, here's a side to the Christmas story that isn't often told. Those soft little hands fashioned by the Holy Spirit in Mary's womb were made so that nails might be driven through them. Those baby feet, pink and unable to walk, would one day stagger up a dusty hill to be nailed to a cross. That sweet infant's head with sparkling eyes and eager mouth was formed so that someday men might force a crown of thorns unto it. That tender body, warm and soft, wrapped in swaddling clothes, would one day be ripped open by a spear. Wow. We don't tell that story, do we? We don't engage in those facets of the baby in the manger. And yet the book of Hebrews makes it pretty clear that this was the purpose for Jesus coming into the world. Our friends who are grieving today as they walk the road to Emmaus had a pretty common mistake. It's the same mistake that we have a tendency to make today. They have not connected the baby in the manger with the suffering servant pouring out his life on a cross. Two monumental events that cannot be separated. They should have known that this was part of God's plan. They should have understood that there was no reason to panic. There was no reason to be grabbed by fear. That Jesus had told them that this was going to happen. He had predicted it. He had said in the book of Matthew chapter 20 and verses 18 and 19 that we're going to Jerusalem and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and he will be condemned to death. He will be mocked, flogged, crucified, and on the third day he will be resurrected. He said that. And not just once, he said it multiple times. If they would have tied the whole picture together, in the moment of greatest confusion, in the darkest hour, instead of going, we don't know what to do, they would have said, God's got this. We can trust him. He knows what he's doing. You see, the baby that we celebrate this time of the year did not stay in the manger. His death was part of God's plan to redeem a world taken captive by sin and rebellion. When Jesus died 33 years after being born and then was raised by the Father from the grave, he really did change the world in a profound and powerful way. But instead of doing it the way that the disciples thought he was going to do it, he did it a different way. This is what caused their disappointment. This is what caused their anxiety. It wasn't a complete absence of faith, but they believed that when God changed the world, that he was going to change the world in a particular way. And when Jesus gave his life on the cross, that was not the way that they had envisioned. They were envisioning thrones and white horses, pulling chariots with soldiers and spears and armies defeating Rome and bringing down the authority. And that wasn't the way that God did it. You know how God did it? One heart at a time. God's kingdom is made up of not armies that do battle, but by transformed lives, one life at a time. It's how he operates. And so instead of being disappointed by the gruesome death and burial of their Messiah, they should have, by faith, expected God to do precisely what he did, because Jesus himself had predicted it. Faith is believing that God's got this. That God is going to do what he said he was going to do, that he's telling you the truth. Faith is not understanding it all or grasping it all or putting the pieces together. Faith is what happens when we simply say, God, I believe that your plan as it unfolds is going to be a good plan. Now hear this. Sometimes when life spins in a different direction, we begin to feel anxiety. And there's biological descriptions of it that I could describe, but you know what I'm talking about. You have felt that. It is that sensation of angst. What am I going to do? Things are out of control. I no longer have control over the situation. What do I need to do to gain control over it? And we begin to feel that. You know what that is? That is you trusting in you to find the answer. You see, everyone trusts in something. If I am not trusting God's plan for my life, then I am trusting in my plan for my life. But everybody trusts something. Some people don't trust God. They trust themselves. Some people don't trust themselves, but they trust God. And some of us walk on both sides of the street, depending on what time it is. God, I know you got this. You've got this under control, and I am not panicking about this. I understand that. And 5 minutes later, I'm walking on the opposite side of the street going, God, what are you doing? I don't understand this at all. Why are you doing it this way? Everybody trusts in something. But when I begin to feel that anxiety, that's where it's coming from. I begin to plug into my inability to control the situation. I get news. I hear things. I watch things. I read things. I watch the news. I hear it a lot on the news. I'm only allowed to watch 20 minutes of news a day because if I watch any more than that, I get discouraged. But can I tell you something else? This is good news. Not only has God promised that you're going to come out of the tunnel that you're in and that you're going to see his hand at work again and that he will be glorified in your situation. Not only for those who follow him is there the hope of heaven that one day we're going to be rewarded for the faithfulness and trust in him. That's great. But if that's all I had, I think it would be hard for me to endure. It's like someday you're going to get better. Someday you're going to not feel like the way you feel today. When? I don't know, but someday. God's gone beyond that. Because of his incredible grace, not only has he said, there is coming a day when for the believer, I am going to completely redeem the pain that you have gone through in this life. And Paul said it this way, I don't even believe that we should be comparing the sufferings of this present time with the glory that's going to be revealed in us, future oriented. So no matter how hard it is today, the future is going to be better. Okay, I like that. But here, God goes beyond that, and this is what God promises. The pain, the anxiety, the things out of control, the unintended circumstances, the unwelcome news, all of those things that hit us, he says, I'm going to redeem those right now. The same Apostle Paul wrote in Romans chapter 8, that God is working everything together in the life of those who love him for our good and for his glory. That means that unwelcome diagnosis, that means that catastrophe, that tragedy, that means that dismissal, that firing, that accident, that means that thing that came into your life that you look at and you say, bad. That was a bad day. That was a bad week. That was a bad summer. He's not just saying, oh, someday you'll see, that'll be great. I'll take care of that someday. It's all going to make sense. He says, right here and right now, I am using those events to do two things, to bless you and to glorify me. You know what ultimately that comes down to? It means that when we get disappointed and we're walking along the road with Jesus, instead of saying, Jesus, this just doesn't make any sense, and our women went to the tomb and they didn't see Jesus, and we're just trying to put the pieces together to this mystery, what they should have said was, we don't know how God's going to pull this off, but we know that it's going to be glorious. There's going to be something in this that's just going to be absolutely spectacular. And there's the promise for you and for me today. But it boils down to a choice, two options. And I'm going to give them to you today. And they're very simple. You may want to write them down. When you are faced with unexpected disappointment, when life comes at you hard, when it burns down, when it burns up, when it's diagnosed, when life crashes on your head, you have two choices. You can rest or you can stew. But you can't do both. Today, you can rest God's got this. Or you can stew. If you stew, you're looking to yourself to find solutions. How am I going to bounce through this? How am I going to move through this season? How am I going to get through this? Or you can say, I rest in Him. I don't know what your soul is facing today. But as Pat said a few weeks ago, this has been a brutally hard year in our church. It's been a lot of loss. What do we do when we're grieving? Well, we can rest or we can stew. There's an old story, probably not true, but it never keeps preachers from repeating old stories. There's an old story of some missionaries that were traveling in the jungle. And they had hired some of the native men to carry their load as they went through the jungle. They were headed into territory that no one had ever been before, and they were in such a hurry to get there. They just couldn't wait to get to this destination, to reach this particular village where they were going to be able to preach and teach the gospel. And so, being good Westerners, they didn't take breaks, they didn't stop for lunch, they didn't stop to rest. As soon as the sun was over the horizon, they were up and they had everybody carrying their heavy loads, walking through the jungle. They didn't stop to eat, and they would walk until the sun started to set. And then the next morning, as soon as the sun came up, boom, they were up, packed up, ready to go. On the morning of the third or fourth day, missionaries came out of their tents and they were ready to go, and let's get the tents packed up and get on the path and let's get going. And someone came and said, we have a problem. The natives refuse to go. And so they went over and they came around the bend, and there were all of their hired help just sitting there on tree stumps, refusing to move. And they said, What's going on? We gotta get going. We have a place that we need to be. And the lead guy said, we need to stay here. And they said, why? We have ground to cover. Good Western thinking. And they said, we need to stay here because we need to wait for our souls to catch up with our bodies. We've been moving too fast, and we need to just wait for our souls to catch up with our bodies. Is it possible that your body might be here today, but your soul needs some ministry? It needs some rest. Would you enjoy this video?